Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Off the Bench. I am your host, Mr. Ken, and joining me, as usual now, it seems, is BZ430 and FIFO Raphael. Not FIFO Raphael, but Raph. And we are the revamped Off the Bench. Thanks, everybody, for listening and sharing the show.
At the time of this recording on Martin Luther King Day, which was yesterday, the NBA played a slew of NBA games on Martin Luther King Day, which they all do. And some, you know, are usually more exciting than others. This one featured a matchup between, obviously, two of the best teams in the NBA. The Cleveland Cavaliers visited the Golden State Warriors. And the game was in prime time, and, you know, we had our popcorn ready, and the game went downhill, like, from the start. Like, it wasn't really much of a game. Golden State ends up blowing away the Cavs. We asked this question before when they played again, when they played on Christmas, which was a more competitive game where Cleveland was victorious. So now they're 1-1. Ken, do you take anything away? What can we take away from these games, if any, or do you think we can take anything away from these games at all?
When I think about this game, I'm pausing a little bit about something to take away from it, mainly because of the reports that started to surface earlier in the game, where it was saying that Tyronn Lue started the rest, Kyrie, Love, and LeBron. Mm-hmm. And considering the fact that Love got hurt, he probably wish he did. Considering the outcome of the game, maybe he wish he did. But yeah, on the flip side,
of that, you know, Adam Silver wasn't going for that. Adam Silver made that phone call, said, "Hey, you better start them boys." Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But you know what? I kind of wonder if you have in your head that you might get a day off, you know, and then you say, "Oh, never mind, we're gonna play." Like, how hyped are you to really get up for that game? So I think that mentally kind of maybe had them checked out a little, because they came out flat. They weren't hitting any shots. They weren't really engaged. And they kind of looked like they were just going through the motions. Meanwhile, Golden State is rolling. And the Cavs didn't look like they even cared whether or not they won or not. So that was interesting in the beginning. They didn't really get involved, engaged in the game until the Draymond foul, and then LeBron kind of turned it up. But at that point, it was probably a little bit too late. One thing I will say, though, out of this game is that even when the Warriors were playing great and the Cavs were not, the Cavs were, like, right there. And the Cavs shot 30%. The Warriors shot close to 60%. The Warriors have been off for 3 days before their game. The Cavs were ending a six-game road trip, six-game in 12 days, I believe. So, you know, I don't know what to make of the Cavs other than seeing that they are in need of another guy, a playmaker, because when Kyrie picked up that second foul, that game really kind of turned. I think the Warriors have kind of figured it out, man. It looks like they finally figured out how to play together. And it looks like Curry was aggressive, but he was aggressive in the right way. He wasn't forcing it. And Durant played within the offense. They played with a lot of intensity, and they got what they wanted. They wanted to blow them boys out, and mission accomplished. But can they do that seven games when the Cavs are really, really focused and locked in? That remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. But I like what I saw from the Warriors, man. I really do.
You know, look, man, we're talking about the two best teams in basketball right now. They've played two games. One was closer than the other. But I didn't take too much. I didn't take too much. I think that both of these teams want each other again. And it's going to be unprecedented. It's never been a back-to-back, you know, finals of the same two teams. So I think we're going to witness history. I think that we're going to see a very competitive finals. But at the end of the day, I'm sticking to it, man. I think Cleveland is the better team, and I think they're going to beat them in six. I don't take anything heavy from this outside of the fact that when Golden State is rolling, going to be hard to beat them boys. Because you talking about three of the best shooters to ever play the game. That's going to be hard. But I don't think that they can maintain that in the finals. And the reason why I say that is Steph Curry has yet to show up in the finals. So I'm not betting on him. You know how I feel about KD? KD be checking out, man. KD misses big time free throws. KD gets knocked to the floor. Like KD gets winked on. Like KD, look, man, for how great he is, when it comes to that moment, he hasn't had many of them where they mean the most. Yes, he has regular in-season game-winning shots and stuff like that, but in the playoffs, name me five playoff moments that KD was just the guy. I'll wait. So with that being said, Draymond is a hothead. We know he by the time playoffs kick around with all the technicals he gets, he probably going to miss a game. And then Klay is off and on. We know that about him. That's him being – there's going to be one game where he might be able to score 100 points. There's going to be another game going to be 3-for-20. I'm not betting on that. I think Cleveland psychologically has an advantage, and that's what I'm rolling with because Ty Lue has them. Ty Lue was the perfect coach, and I'll reference when he took over the squad from David Black. He said the first person he talked to was LeBron James, and he said, "LeBron, I have to hold you accountable privately and in front of the team." During these past finals, when LeBron was playing like a punk, Ty Lue called him out and basically said, "What the hell are you doing?" LeBron obviously had a rebuttal, but Ty Lue put him in his place. When you can make LeBron play like LeBron, and we know what Kyrie is. We don't have to coach Kyrie to be Kyrie. Kyrie is the sniper. Kyrie's the assassin. Kyrie's the closer. We know that. But as a head coach, if you can put your foot up LeBron's behind, to keep him at that elevated level and do not allow him to drop off, challenge him every time. Yeah, you might be scoring. You might be doing this. You might be doing everything. You're supposed to do that. You're LeBron. But I need you to be the greatest. And when you have a coach that can do that, that's what I'm going with, man. And they just added another piece in Kyle Korver to accentuate the sets of LeBron and also Kyrie and to help out K Love as well, man. I'm going with Cleveland is the better team, man. They're gonna beat them boys in six.
He put a number on it. He said in six. Yeah. I think, you know, to be honest, man, and much like, you know, the previous podcast that we had, I personally can't take much from these games. I thought it was the thing that I took from the Christmas game and the thing that I took from you know, last night's game, well, not so much last night because I didn't see it as much, but the Christmas game, and I mentioned on the previous podcast, was that I thought that, you know, both teams played well defensively, and the help defense I thought was very, very key. I didn't see a lot of that, particularly on the Cleveland side, but, you know, like Ken said, they're playing it was game six of in like the last 12 days or something like that. And you know, some nights you have it, some nights you don't. You know, some nights you just want to mail it in. And it just so happened that, I mean, the mere fact that Tyronn Lue publicly admitted that he was contemplating sitting these guys, sitting his stars, let you know that. And this has been a bumpy, you know, six game stretch for them, on road stretch for them anyway. That right there let you know that, you know, they probably weren't going to have it. And like Ken said, there's something to looking forward to having a day off and just getting a day to rest your body as opposed to, you know, banging and grinding. But I'm pretty sure, I mean, the competitor in LeBron, the competitor in Kyrie and Love and those guys, you know, they want to play Golden State. But they know what we know. I mean, it matters, but it don't matter. I like the move, particularly for the Hawks, getting rid of Kyle Korver. I think he'll do well in Cleveland. He's there to create space and knock down open jump shots. But much like he was here in Atlanta, Kyle Korver is a defensive liability. And it looked to me like, and it could have been because they were tired. I don't know. But it looked to me like Cleveland said, okay, you know what? Korver's on the floor. He's the mark. We're going to him. I mean, like, they went at him each and every chance they could. Anytime somebody was matched up against him, they were trying to abuse him on the defensive end. And he doesn't play defense. It's not that he doesn't try, but he's just not. I mean, he's a defensive liability. He always has been. But I don't take much from the game. I would have liked to have seen a more competitive game. Can I give you props for watching the whole game? Because I think I checked out somewhere in the third quarter. Because I was like, they're up by 30. They probably not coming back. So it's okay if I go to sleep. If I wake up and I get 20 texts from you guys, you know, talking about how great a game it was, then I'm going to be mad as hell that I fell asleep. But, you know, I was going to take that risk last night because it just wasn't happening. Carmelo Anthony in the New York Knicks has been in the news. There's been reports in the New York media, and Carmelo's getting killed in the media in New York City. And he has been from day one. He, you know, forced his trade to come to New York City. And we all know he has the no trade clause. But he had a meeting today with Phil Jackson and, you know, basically just to ask, like, hey, what's up with us? You know, like, hey, do you guys want me here? And just to kind of clear the air, because Carmelo basically came out and said, like, look, man, I'm tired of my name being thrown around. And I think one of the things that kind of set Carmelo off was that a prominent writer, Charlie Rosen, who is a good friend of Phil Jackson's, wrote a scathing piece on Carmelo Anthony. And he said, quote unquote, you know, Carmelo's time in New York has come to an end. And Carmelo's just like, look, man, you know, if it's my time, you know, then it's my time. But I need to hear it from your mouth. So he set up a meeting and he met with Phil Jackson as of the time of this recording earlier today, according to reports. According to reports, the meeting was, quote unquote, more contentious than before. So with that being said, Ken, I'll throw it to you, man. Is it time for Mel? Do you think Melo should stay or should he go? We know he has a no trade clause. Should he stay or should he go?
Man, it's been time, man. Melo is wasting away his career. His career is becoming a joke. We don't even think about Melo when we think about great players in the NBA, and it should not be that way. And he needs to quit being so damn stubborn. Get out. They don't want you there. It's becoming evident with each passing day. And they're creating, I think, the situation to force you to make a decision to leave. But more importantly, Melo, do this for yourself and get out of there. Go somewhere where you could be part of a winning organization so you can cap your career off the way I personally want to see it capped off. And I think it's time for him to go, man. I sometimes wonder, I believe Melo is being truthful when he says that he doesn't want to leave New York. Mm-hmm. I think he's being loyal to a fault. I don't know why, but whatever it is, he just doesn't want to leave. But it's time for him to go. I don't want – this would be a sad end to a career of a guy that should have been a Hall of Famer. It's time for Melo to go.
Okay. BZ430, man, what about you? Should Melo stay or should he go?
Yep, I think he should go, man. I think he should not – I think I've been saying this for a couple of years now. Like, he should go and be someone's number two guy. Like, he should be someone Scottie Pippen at this point in his career. And I think he at this point in his career right now, I think he would flourish being the next guy, the second in command. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, let me stop you right there. Do you think he's willing to go somewhere? Because I think Carmelo might be in that situation in his career where he still feels like he's that guy. Like, I mean, do you think he's willing to go someplace else and play the backseat, if you will?
I don't know if he thinks he's that guy, though.
I don't think he knows that he can put the team on his shoulders now. And this ain't the Denver Carmelo. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think so. I think he needs to just, if not, yeah, accept that he's the number two guy. Go to a squad where he can be that number two guy, that number two option, the best, second best option on the team. And a team that's a little more defensive oriented, because I mean, we all know he's not really fully committed on the defensive end of the ball. You know, Melo, I'm serious. Melo gets buckets. I know. So that's what he does, you know. So, you know, go somewhere where you can be second fiddle to someone, man, and I think he can possibly win a championship that way if he does. But yeah, like I 100% agree with Kim, man. He just wasting his years, his second, this ending coming downhill of his basketball career at New York, man. Just go somewhere where you can try to, you know, help a team get put the position to win an NBA championship. That's my opinion.
Should have been left. He should have left as a free agent. He should have signed with Chicago. I think that would have been his best opportunity, because he basically has the Chicago rejects now. Mm. He could have played with Noah and D Rose almost in their prime. So he should have been left, man.
With Jimmy Butler.
What was that?
I said and, with Jimmy Butler, too.
With Jimmy. And Miritic.
Yep.
With all that.
That's a good point, man.
I think that would have been very formidable. But it's time for him to go, man. I think the reason why he's loyal to New York is because that's what Lala wants. And I think because he's a superstar, he can dictate where he's going to play. You know, especially now that he has a no-trade clause. So I don't think he's loyal to the New York Knicks. I think he's loyal to New York City for Lala. That's my opinion. I don't have no inside information. This is just a dude outside looking in, because there is no basketball reason right now to stay in New York, especially if you can get traded to somebody like the Clippers that desperately needs somebody like you. I don't understand. Porzingis is nice, but guess what? New York is at a point where they need to blow it up and build around Porzingis. Mm-hmm. Become a lottery team for the next probably 2 years, get you some nice young talent, develop that talent for the next year or two, then be able to sign some free agents to help expedite the development of that talent. And then in 5 to 6 years, you'll be back in contention. But that's just the way that the cycle goes. If you want to buy your team, look what happens. This is what happens. It's not cohesive. It's not a culture. It's mismatched pieces that you're trying to jam and force together. Sometimes it works depending on the superstar. Most oftentimes it does not. Build your team the right way. You already have a unicorn. Build around that, because they don't make him like Kim.
Honestly, man, I want to see him stay and work it out, man. I really don't like the way that Phil is handling this. Phil is doing a lot of playing the games in the media and stuff like that. And I'm glad that Carmelo
always had.
Yeah, he no, always have. But you know, FIVO, it's that passive aggressiveness I don't like. You know, it's just, I mean, if you got an issue with, and I understand Phil didn't bring him there, so he may or may not be Phil's guy. I mean, on the outside looking in, it doesn't appear that he is. You know, but, you know, they had a marriage. FIVO, you make a great point about, you know, New York and whether or not Carmelo's committed to New York or committed to the Knicks. Now, Carmelo's married to Lala. And, you know, Carmelo, and speaking as another married man, you know, you're going to go where your wife say go. So, you know, even as we look at the Pasa and Ken's over there laughing because he's married, too, for those of you listening who do not know. So even if we look at the possibility of Carmelo leaving, wherever he goes, you know, Lala got to be cool with it. So like me and my boys, we were actually discussing this today, via text. And, you know, one of my boys mentioned the Clippers, he was like, you know, trading for Blake Griffin straight up. And I don't even know if the salaries match or anything like that. But, while I think that could benefit LA, you know, then you got Porzingis and Blake, you know, basically, I guess, playing the same position, right? So, you know, that doesn't work for New York. And then there's the Lakers, which nobody threw out. And I don't know if the Lakers are interested. You know, it would give them the star power that they want. But Carmelo's quest to, you know, get a championship ring is probably not going to happen. So we'll see. It sounds as if he's at least open to the idea of the possibility of it if they're not committed. But the one, and I'll leave with this, the one thing that I found interesting, at least based on these reports, was that, okay, Carmelo requested the meeting and what have you. And Phil Jackson asked him, are you committed to stay in New York? What does that mean? I mean, like, Carmelo's always been committed to stay in New York. He never said, I want out. He's just tired of his name being thrown around. He's just like, yo, Phil, keep my name out your mouth. You know, so it's crazy, man. I want to see Carmelo win, and I want to see him. And it's unfortunate, like Ken said, I think he's a Hall of Famer, but he's probably not going to win a ring, you know, and the likelihood of him playing with CP3 or LeBron is, you know, not going to happen. So if he wants out, you know, or if some team wants him, like let's say a team like a Memphis or a team that may be lower in like an eighth or ninth seed that's trying to get, you know, to the next level, he could probably go there. But, you know, you got to clear with Lala first. You know, Lala ain't trying to go to Utah. So that's that.
So earlier today, and I think I don't know who sent this to us, but we found out that Chris Paul is going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. And it seems like every single year, Chris Paul or somebody on that team, at least for the last couple of years, end up hurt. And here we are again in the season. Blake is still out. And now Chris Paul is gone. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but when he was out earlier, they didn't look all that hot. How do you think how do you think this will impact the Clippers for the next 6 to 8 weeks with Austin Rivers as the starting point guard?
I think they can make do. Obviously, they're not the same team at all, because what you just said, right? They've been injured in the past, so this is a road well traveled for this team. So they know how to navigate these murky waters right now. So I'm not too worried about that. I'm more so worried about Doc Rivers. What does this mean? Because Blake Griffin is about to be a free agent. CP's about to be a free agent. They continuously get hurt when you think they're starting to catch their stride.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happens to this squad at the end of the season, to be completely honest with you. And I'm scared because I like this team, and I always think they're right on the cusp. But this injury now, 6 to 8 weeks, Blake is still out. DeAndre's picking it up. I think they'll be fine. I think they could be at least a 500 team. They'll make the playoffs. But I don't know how far they go, man. And I don't know what the future holds for their big three plus Doc Rivers.
You know, they're fourth in the West right now. And, you know, with Chris Paul on the court, their offensive efficiency is 114.3, with him off is 103.4. They have a net deficiency rating of -4.9, plus 15.9 with him on the court. He's very, very valuable to that team. Of course, obviously the assists come down naturally, and the field goal percentage drops as well because he gets everybody easier shots. I'm with you in terms of thinking about the Clippers as a whole, because when I was listening to the JJ Reddick podcast, you know, I think he thinks they needed some pieces, but he also feels like they're right there. And they have been beset by injuries over the last couple of seasons. And the injuries that they've had has impacted them, because they felt like they could have beaten the Warriors if they didn't lose the guys that they lost. But now here we are again. Blake is out, 13th game missed. And, you know, Chris Paul is gone. And they're 3-9 without him. I don't know, man. B, what do you think, man? You like their chances without Chris Paul?
No, I think they can probably even, you said they're four right now, right?
Yeah, they're four. Why are you talking? I'll look up the standings.
I can see them, you know, after these 6 to 8 weeks, I can see them getting knocked down to like that 6 or 7 seed, man. Yeah, it's possible it can happen, you know, especially, and I don't know how much longer Blake is going to be out, but if you go with both of your two best players, one of them being your general, your coach on the floor, out for that long, I mean, you know, granted, saving grace, you know, Chris Paul will be back and healthy by the time, playoffs get started. You know, it was 6 to 8 weeks, so you figured, March, mid-March, around sometime that way, that you get down to the nitty-gritty of the NBA regular season at that point. So, I mean, unless he comes back and they pick it back up and get back up to the games. But I think by the time he comes back after serving the 6 to 8 – serving – after coming back in the 6 to 8 weeks of injury, I think they might be, like, looking at that 6 or 7 seed in the West right now. And I mean, by the time that comes around. So, I don't know, man. You saw what happened when they had the worst luck last year when Chris Paul and Blake Griffin went out during the playoffs. So, hopefully, they won't have no nagging injuries going into the playoffs, or it happens during playoffs. Because, like people say, man, I like this squad. I really like this, and I always like Doc Rivers as a coach. So, I kind of want to see them get over that curse, that hump. But I don't know, man. I think going into this year, I believe that they feel like this is their last year to kind of go at it, like their last shot before, before they break everything up. Because I really think, if they go in the playoffs one and done, first round done, they definitely gonna have to make some moves. Somebody gonna have to go. Some folks gonna have to get traded or something. Like, I think they're gonna have to break up that DeAndre, Chris Paul, and Blake Griffin three. I believe so, and I think that's why they seem so focused before. Going in this preseason before the season started, because I think they know that this is their last shot or last year to try to win a title. So, yeah, man. Unfortunately, I hate to see them get down like this for injury, but he'll be back way before playoffs. So hopefully he had that month to kind of get back into the groove of things, and Blake will be back, and they had a whole team healthy. I want to see them 100% healthy going into this playoffs, man, because I really think they can be a threat in the West.
They, I'm looking at their schedule, and Chris Paul should come back right around March. And there are a lot of winnable games from the end of January to and throughout February. But the thing about it is that they play Golden State three times between now and March 1st.
Mm.
Three times without Chris Paul. I want to ask FIFO, have you seen Austin Rivers play much? What do you think about him?
I think he's a solid backup combo guard. He can give you minutes at the one, minutes at the two. If you're going extra small, he can give you minutes at the three. Not a starter because he doesn't do any one thing consistently. But, he's a multi-versatile guy for any coach. And right now, for the next – for the foreseeable weeks, he's just going to have to step up. The thing about him, he can't necessarily tailor his game. His game is his game. He's more of a score-first kind of guard. I don't think he's a point guard or a shooting guard. He's just a guard, a guy that's out there that can handle the rock, make quick decisions, score the ball when need to, shoot a high percentage from the free throw line, have high IQ offensively and defensively, but is not special in any one facet of the game. So, that's his shortcoming, but that's why I'm not that worried. I think every NBA team needs one or two of those type of guys, because those are your safety guys, just in case something happens. Jamal Crawford, something like that too. We know him as a scorer, but he could play either position, right? He can give you a couple weeks just in case if you got hurt. Obviously, it's a tremendous drop off. You just read out the stats of offensive efficiency with and without Chris Paul. We know how great of a player Chris Paul is. Both of them cannot equate what Chris Paul is.
I want to go to the Cavs, and we noticed that they needed a playmaker. Well, Nate Robinson came out today and basically said, "Hey, I'm right here, man. why y'all ain't call me? I'm here. I'm ready. Somebody give me a call." Is Nate Robinson kind of that guy that they need, or is he a guy that they can use? Also, Ralph, real quick, we also threw out Mario Chalmers before you got to the shoot. He's another guy that's out there that they could probably add to the squad that may be helpful. I don't know if he's that playmaker, but, what do you think about them?
Yeah, Mark, look, here's the thing with Nate Robinson. Nate Robinson has been out the league for the last two, maybe 3 years.
Yeah,
he's just trying to give him a check. You know, he went and tried to try out for an NFL team too. Like, he's just out here trying to make some money, which I understand. I don't know if he fits the Cleveland Cavs because they have a younger version of him already there. Obviously, Nate has a lot more NBA experience than Felder. More experience than Felder, obviously, with him being a rookie. But I definitely think Mario Chalmers is, or probably is, the right guy for the job. Why? He's played with LeBron. You play with LeBron, then that means you got some championship moxie about you. Won a chip in Kansas? Won a chip in college, playing for Kansas over D. Rose in Memphis. So, and he's hit big shots. It's not like he's scared to make plays. Obviously, it's a completely different system, but he's a champion, man. And I think that they are missing somebody like that. I think out of the potential people that can fill that void, my favorite person for them is Jerry Jack. Because out of those guys, I think Jerry Jack is the most consistent. And Jerry Jack is one of those guys that if Kyrie was to get hurt for 6 to 8 weeks, you can just plug him in. You don't lose much. Obviously, and look, man, I'm a big Kyrie stan, so you lose, but I'm just saying the production will not fall off as drastic as you see like in with the Clippers. So I just think they need to make a move if they're going to make a move or develop Kay Felder. It's one or the other. I think Griffin, their GM, has done a great job so far. He'll figure it out. I have confidence in him now. You know what I'm saying? I think he understands the type of team he has. He has a lot of weapons and not enough playmakers to make it all happen. Because Kyrie's a weapon more so than a playmaker. LeBron's the one true playmaker on his squad. They really need one other person at least.
Jared Jack, actually, I don't think he's playing for a team. I'm looking on HoopsRumors.com, and they're saying that the veteran free agents that are out there now is Mario Chalmers, Norris Cole, Jerry Jack, and Andre Miller. I don't like any of these players from the D-League, Briante Weber, Ray McCollum, Julian Stone, and Xavier Mumford, because I think they're looking for somebody with experience. As far as trades, they throw out here J.J. Barea, Barbosa, Devin Harris, and Jameer Nelson. I don't really like any of those except maybe Barea. And then
I like Jameer.
Devin. I like Devin. I mean, for a backup, I like Devin Harris, a good point guard that plays defense.
He's too erratic offensively for me.
Yeah, I think LeBron will get him in check, though, over there at Cleveland.
Really like. I still like Jerry Jack out of all of them, though.
They're talking about trading Zach LaVine, man. Zach LaVine and Ricky Rubio and Shabazz Muhammad are all on the block.
I think you just have to know what the interest is or what the market value is for Zach LaVine. I hope they don't trade him because I may say something right now that people listening to this might think I'm crazy as hell. Mm-mm. But I trade Wiggins.
What?
I would keep Zach LaVine. Yeah. I would trade Wiggins. I would keep Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn. And that's the guy I would trade. Mainly because when I look at Wiggins, I think he's a good player. I don't think he could be the number one guy on a championship team. And I think what LaVine brings, he's going to prove he can be a number one guy on a championship team. I don't know if Wiggins really wants it, and I don't think his skill set complements what LaVine and Kat are able to do right now. If you look at LaVine's numbers, the jump he made is super big, and not just offensively. His defensive game is super big right now. I've watched a lot of Minnesota basketball this season. Shout out to Verizon. If you got an 8 gig plan or higher, you get NBA League Pass for free. So it's a reason to switch. Shameless plug. But I've watched a lot of Minnesota Timberwolves, man. And Zach LaVine, to me, at times, outside of Cat, is their best player. Wiggins is lost too much. He puts up numbers, but it's not as impactful as what Wiggins, I mean, what LaVine is doing right now. So I think because he's playing better than Wiggins, you try to gauge to see what other teams are willing to give you for him. You know, because I still think Wiggins is a bigger name, but LaVine is playing better right now. So I just think it's just trying to figure out what the interest is. I don't know if they make a move. If they do make a move, I know who Thibodeau wants. He wants Jimmy. But I don't think that there's another free agent that turns it around this season. If I'm Thibodeau in Minnesota, I'm standing pat. If there's any one person to trade, I agree with you, Ken, it is Rubio. Let's bite the bullet. They know they're not going to make the playoffs this year. Get another high draft pick. Maybe in the offseason, package that draft pick with a Wiggins and or LaVine plus some other pieces of Shabazz and see what you can get in the offseason. But right now, I'm standing pat. I'm trying to give Chris Dunn as much playing time as possible, because he may be in the future plans, or he might not be. Maybe he's another trade chip.
Wiggins, though?
Wiggins. Well, you know, when you look at his per and his efficiency, even though he's putting up numbers, it doesn't lend to how the NBA game is being played now. Too many mid-range shots. Doesn't shoot a very high percentage. Does not get to the free throw line enough. Does not get assists or rebounds. Wiggins is nice and athletic freak, but I think he's probably the third best team or the third best player on the championship team, man. I like him. I don't love him. Jabari Parker is better. I said it coming into the draft. I've stood by that. Obviously, he's hurt. He's just now finding his stride. Jabari Parker is a much better pro prospect, and I think basketball player right now and for the foreseeable future than Andrew Wiggins.
They look pretty even to me so far.
No, I thought that. Nah, I agree with people. I thought coming into that draft that year when they came out, I thought Jabari Parker was more pro-ready than Andrew Wiggins, in my opinion. Just seeing what his game has come to and how he's progressed. And just he's just a better – he's a more polished player to me than Andrew
Wiggins.
He is. Now,
he understands the game. Parker understands the game on a different level than Wiggins does. And it's evident every time I watch him play. Wiggins is figuring it out. Jabari's ready to get buckets.
No, Jabari has been playing well. I think both of these guys, obviously they're still young and trying to, I guess, figure it out. Jabari lost, a whole year? So he's behind Wiggins in terms of development, and I think towards the end of last year he was balling, and this year he kind of started out a little slow, and I don't know if that had to do with adjusting to, you know, how Jason Kidd wants to run that team, using the Greek Freak as like the focal point for that team instead of Jabari. But are you saying that, like, okay, so is it Greek Freak 1 and Jabari 2 on that team, or should Jabari be the man and Greek Freak like play some secondary role or be 1B or something like that?
Greek Freak is a poor man long version LeBron James. That's exactly what Greek Freak is. He's not as athletic as LeBron, but he makes it up with length. You're seeing the feel for the game grow, like his IQ, his vision, every single year, mm-hmm. It just gets bigger and bigger. And it's scary because it's still getting bigger and bigger. And the type of skills he's adding at his size is not supposed to happen. It's a lot like KD. It like guys that size are not supposed to be able to do what these guys are doing. So I think that Greek Freak, because he's developing more into a playmaker, weird kind of glue type of guy, that the ball has to be in his hands to set up everybody in the playoff of him. But Jabari's the number one scoring option. Don't get it twisted. Jabari's the scoring option. Greek is just orchestrating everything. Greek is never going to – I don't think it's going to – once Jabari starts to settle in, like I said, this is his first year. But once Jabari settles in, Jabari's going to average more points than him. But Greek, I think, is probably going to hold the rock and have more usage than Jabari. So he's going to be their pseudo point guard like LeBron is for Kyrie and K-Love. That's how I see those two guys coexisting together. But Jabari is going to get buckets, and you're running your offense. Like, you're running your offense to get Jabari a shot. And then everything else is play. You're relying on the playmaking ability of Giannis.
Yeah, I like Jabari. But, damn, I don't know if I'm getting rid of Wiggins. You know what I think hurt Wiggins, man? Karl Anthony Towns. Because he makes – what? I think he came on that team and he became the man on that team. And that team was supposed to be Wiggins' team.
Nah, man. Look, that's all irrelevant. You know why? Because when you're supposed to be the man, you will be the man. And if you're not supposed to be the man, you ain't going to be the man. Cat has a game that makes players around him better. If you cannot be better playing with Cat, guess what? You shouldn't. You're not going to win a championship. It's as simple as that. It's like playing with LeBron. You can't play with LeBron, you can't win a championship. You can't play under Popovich, there's something wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like there's just certain places, certain players, certain systems that if you cannot thrive, it just shows how I don't want to say how bad of a basketball player you are, but maybe how inept, or maybe you're not as great as, but I'm telling you, man, like.
So where does Wiggins is nice. So where does he go? Like, is he one of those guys?
I think he needs a Popovich. I think if I can put Wiggins with any one coach and be like, this is the guy that's going to develop you the most, Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens can get the ceiling out of Wiggins. But I don't think on that squad – I don't think with his current skill set, I don't think with his current IQ, I don't see it, man. I don't see him being the reason why a team makes it to the playoffs. I don't think he can do it by himself. I don't see it. He does not impact the game in other areas. You look at all of the elite players in the NBA. They impact the game in a multitude of ways, right? Like, rebounding, assists, steals, deflections, chain shots, block shots, all of these things. What does Wiggins do great? He's not a great scorer. He's an okay scorer. He uses his athleticism to score. Not a great shooter, an okay shooter. I'll give him a good mid-range shooter, and he has a nice spin move. That's it. He doesn't impact it defensively, doesn't impact it rebounding. What does he do? To me, he's not elite. And for him to reach that ceiling is going to be really difficult.
Future superstar potential?
I think it's going to be difficult. I think he has superstar athleticism, but I don't think he has superstar game. Jabari got superstar game.
Wait, you don't think Wiggins has superstar game?
Nah, I think he has all-star game.
What? And
I think he has superstar athleticism.
Ken, like, oh my God. You know, Ken loves Wiggins, man.
I know. I like Wiggins, too. I like Wiggins too, but hey, you know, I call it how it is, man. I call it how it is. I don't think he has superstar potential. Superstar gets you to the playoffs. Superstar do what DeMarcus Cousins doing right now. That's what a superstar does. I don't see that in Wiggins.
And did you guys hear about that? That contract extension for $207 million. Is that real?
Yeah. Welcome to the CBA.
It's yeah. Not even that. Like, I was just shocked that he
would sign?
Yes.
Ken, look. There's basketball decisions, emotional decisions, and financial decisions.
Don't tell me that was about the money. $40 million
on the table just because you don't like where you playing? Oh, give me the $40 million. I'm sorry. You could trade me later.
But I thought that, okay, clearly I don't know DeMarcus Cousins, but... And if somebody put that much in front of me, I'll probably resign too, to be honest with you, because that's a lot of damn money. But I was shocked, one, that the Kings were willing to invest in him, considering their relationship. And two, I thought DeMarcus Cousins was interested in winning because I don't have faith.
Hold on, Ken. Number one, how many times do you draft with DeMarcus Cousins? You better throw him the max money. You don't draft guys like that often. Number two, this is his first contract, Ken. His first big contract. He's going to sign it. His second contract, that's when you can critique, oh, I thought you wanted to win. No, your first one, get your money, young man. Get your money. Come on, Ken. We all want to win, but when you're young, get your money. Let's worry about winning on the second contract.
Maybe I'm being selfish because I want to say, well, you know, he's my favorite. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA, and I want to see that brother succeed, man. And when they were winning, I think it was under Mike Malone, and they got rid of Mike Malone on some BS. It was the worst thing they ever done, and it would have been hard to run away from that money. But I seeing what they did to my career, just wasting away in there, like this dude, nobody talks. The only time people talk about DeMarcus Cousins is when he's in trouble. This dude is like probably top five in the NBA right now, and he's an afterthought. Shouldn't be that way. But $207 million. When I saw that the day after we recorded, I was like, "Good God Almighty!" And I thought it was just a rumor.
Man, get that paper.
Get that paper. Oh. It's the first one, Ken.
It's the first one. Get that paper.
Gotta get the paper, bro. You gotta get the paper.
Y'all like winning too much.
Nah, man. Ken, my philosophy has never changed. Your first contract in the NBA, get your money. It don't matter about winning. It don't matter about winning right now. It's on the organization to do something. DeMarcus Cousins has earned every penny of that $207 million contract extension. Okay, he did his job.
Just like when Anthony Davis got that big contract with New Orleans, like sign that paper, man. Get that paper.
Yeah. Get that paper. Put the pressure and the onus on that organization.
Yep. To
build a roster around you because you already did your job and proved why you're worth that money.
Yep.
Vlade Divac is the guy that should be on the hottest hot seat in the NBA right now. And because, look, you have the best overall big man in the NBA. There's no reason why you guys are under 500. Not under 500. That just don't make no sense. And then you get rid of the one coach that your star player was able to get along with. Mm-hmm. Vlade. In Sacramento, I don't know what the hell y'all doing, but get that man DeMarcus Cousins his money, and let's make some smart decisions moving forward.
And you know I said the same thing to people when Anthony Davis got that big contract. I said, all right, so now they pay him. Now the pressure is on the front office to try to put the proper players around him so he can look like he's worth that money that he's getting paid. Now he's just a superstar that's getting paid a lot of money. But he don't got the right role players and folks around him to kind of at least be a playoff team. So, it's on that front office, man. It's on that front office.
Did you guys hear about the NBA expanding to two more teams?
Yeah.
No.
I saw that. The cities they was looking at was probably, you know, going back to Seattle. Louisville was one of them. Las Vegas. Wow. Las Vegas was one of them. And what's the other cities? Help me out, Ken. I know. I just remember Louisville, Seattle, and Las Vegas. Maybe because those were the front runners. Those were like the two most front runner squads. And I think Mexico City. Mexico City was one of them.
But if you add like Las Vegas and Seattle, I think you got to move New Orleans and Memphis to the east.
Probably so. Yeah, because that's two West Coast teams.
You know, I think the thing about it is, well, I wonder how this would impact the league in terms of players.
I mean, that's always the question when you adding two new teams. You know, the same question when Vancouver and Toronto was added.
You're talent.
Yeah, because we have bad teams. We have enough bad teams already.
Did I mention this a couple weeks ago on Dead End Sports? The talent level that is coming up and the amount of talent that's coming up, the NBA is going to need to expand. Remember I told you about the Thon Makers? I told you about the Joel Embiids. I told you about all Lonzo Ball is going to be next. There's another point guard, Markel Fultz, De'Aaron Fox, Monk. Like there's so many guys. I can't think of his first name. Michael Porter Jr. You know what I'm saying? Young bull that plays out here in Atlanta. I can't remember the name of the high school, but he's about to go play for Alabama. And what's his name? Avery Johnson. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of young NBA, I'm not going to say ready, but NBA prospect talent that's coming through the ranks, man. And you're going to see an influx of talent like we've never seen. I'm telling you, the big man is back. They're going to be back. They're different. But I'm telling you, man, the NBA knows. The NBA knows. The talent, the way it's coming out, they're more ready earlier. Look at Kat. Look at Porzingis. These guys are training specifically for basketball at a much younger age. They're eating like they're professional athletes at a much younger age. These guys are competing at a much younger age, man. These guys are just ready. They're ready. And I think the NBA knows. The NBA knows.
The last thing I got before we get out of here, Devin Booker, man, this was a guy we talked about earlier in the year as one of those guys that, at least for me, I was looking forward to watching him play this year. And he got off to kind of a up and down start. But in the last couple of games, this brother has been rolling. And this is the guy that I think we all have been waiting to see. 28. 39, 39, and 25. Looking at this team with Bledsoe and Brandon Knight, Booker, do you think Booker is capable of being like the guy in Phoenix?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm talking about the about Alpha Dog. Like he is the man.
Yeah, I already said. I remember I was watching like a little behind the scenes practice with Coach Watson, and other teammates was like, "Yeah, this guy is the vocal leader when he's on the court. Like he's the most energetic player. Like he gets us going. Like they were talking like he's the heartbeat of the team. You know, so yeah, definitely, most definitely, Ken.
That's a lot to show to be that guy.
Yeah, that's cool. If he's confident enough, if you're confident enough that you can put that team on your shoulders, then, you know, by all means, be that way. We've seen plenty of players be young and take the team, put the team on their shoulders before, so it's nothing new. I think if he's confident enough to do it, he can do it.
Is it time for Brandon Knight to go?
Oh, yeah.
Trade him while you can get, trade for him and get some pieces while you can. Don't wait too late.
I'd even trade Bledsoe.
Yep. Get him while it's going good. Get him while it's good.
Yeah. The only person I probably try to keep, obviously, outside of Devin Booker is Alex Len. Everybody else can go.
Everybody else can go.
I like T.J. Warren. You guys don't like T.J. Warren?
Yeah, but depending on what I'm getting back, he can go too.
Why do you like Alex Len? Because I keep hearing and reading a lot about him. He looks
mobile.
Slow.
Yep, mobile. Uh-huh.
He looks
real
slow.
Mobile big guy.
Mobile big man.
He can run the court.
Yeah, could run the court, change and block shots, get rebounds. He's never going to be a 20-10 guy, but I think he could be like 14-10 guy, 16-10 guy, third or fourth best player on the championship squad. You need a big man that can switch pick and roll.
Yep.
That can pick and roll himself. So willing passer, somebody like
young, and he's young, real young, so he's still, it's still a learning curve, it's still room for improvement. So yeah, the ceiling's still going for Lynn.
Mm-hmm. Everybody else can go.
Damn, Bledsoe though.
Yeah, look what you can get for Bledsoe right now. It's not like you're trading him too late. Man, look what you can get for him still. You can probably get some nice draft picks. You can probably get some nice – you can get a nice – another player to compliment Booker with or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, man.
Yeah, I let that go.
Well, I guess if you got Devin Booker and everybody's high on him, I guess you could trade away everybody else. What about Marquese Chriss? You giving up on him already too? And Dragan Bender?
No, you keep Bender too. I'm sorry. I forgot they drafted Dragan Bender. Bender, Len, and Booker are the only untouchables right now. Everybody else can go.
If you're listening, please subscribe on YouTube. Leave us a 5-star rating and a comment in the comment section. Q, we got possibly new shows coming with Q and Deuce. So I'm talking to them. They're trying to get their act together. And they'll be on here and we'll bring them on as guests too. Q always has some crazy interesting things to say about basketball and so does Deuce as well. So we'll have them on the show and kind of talk shop with them also. But